Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
I have never been more excited to cut my grass.
Just because of the weather, right?
Yes, sir. I mean, the long winter. We can finally put it behind us. It was a long winter, a long, cold, boring, miserable winter. We can put it behind us now for more greener pastures. And yes, I've never been more excited to mow my lawn. And that's exactly what I did this past week. And it felt oh so good.
And your upcoming weather forecast for this week in the greater Maryland area. Some hailstorms are going to erupt with some decreasing temperatures thanks to Ray's oversight there with the weather. But nah, I'm just kidding there. But yeah, it has been nice. I mean, granted, you've had the flash flood warnings over the weekend, but it hasn't been too terrible.
Yeah, it hasn't really been terrible at all. I mean, it could be worse. We could have an entire street collapse in Baltimore like what happened last year.
Oh, that was awful.
Yeah, right, especially all the people screaming in the background, everything like that. But that's in the past. This is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. We got some stuff on the docket for you today. Orioles, obviously, we're going to be talking about their weekend review. The NFL draft coming up very soon, so we're going to have a little bit of a positional mock draft. We're not giving you our actual picks, but what we're going to do is we're going to go by what position that the Ravens will go in each round and see how that matches up with the final draft itself. Josh?
Yeah, so this is pretty much a rough draft here. We're not going to be name dropping yet.
Rough draft, yeah.
Yeah, so
okay, but so that was weak.
Yeah, it was a little weak there, but yeah, I know. You have mock draft, rough draft, final draft, but yeah, basically gonna go by position. We aren't gonna get into the nitty gritty, the trades. Are we gonna be trading this year's picks, next year's picks? That'll be on the next episode of the Baltimore Sports Free for All. But yep, we're gonna be talking Orioles, Ravens, also NBA, NHL postseason predictions. Yes, we are currently in the NBA and NHL postseason predictions. By the way, one of the funniest social media posts I've seen on Facebook recently was, why does Derrick Rose always look like he just woke up from a nap? I see that, and I'm like, every picture that you Google on Derrick Rose, he literally looks like he woke up.
Yeah, like, there's that, and it seems like, oh, Derrick Rose is actually playing right
he's
now?
He's actually playing. Oh, yeah, he just did that.
Yeah, he's going to be in the NBA playoffs this year.
Both his knees are working?
Wow, that's something to, wow, don't trade in your tickets just yet, folks, because we have ourselves a
Derrick Rose sighting.
A Derrick Rose sighting. Something in the history of the NBA. Yes, Derrick Rose is going to be playing in the NBA playoffs. It's a little bit exciting for Derrick Rose fans. He's not going to become Greg Oden.
Yep, and for you local DC fans out there, we'll be talking about the Capitals and the Wizards as they are currently in their postseason race. Wizards in a much better position than the Caps at this moment.
I couldn't believe that considering how the Wizards played down the stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. they kind of look like the Wizards of old. They look like the Michael Jordan Wizards.
Yeah, it was.
I cannot believe that I could say that in the sense.
The Kwame Brown Wizards.
Brown Wizards.
Oh my God!
With Juan Dixon.
Juan Dixon was the only redeeming quality of that team back in the day. Can you say that 10 years past? It's back in the day.
How about Jerry Stackhouse as well? I mean, Stackhouse was on the team.
That is a name from the past there.
Felipe Lopez.
And speaking of the Wizards, also, I'm sure this will be a topic of discussion later this summer in the offseason, but Kevin Durant, may he return home to the nation's capital? That'll definitely be some big news. But yes, we'll be talking NBA, NHL postseason. Also, our two-minute rants. Mine is going to be about how aspiring young sports reporters can take notice of an ill-advised lack of personality can nearly cost you your job and how you should avoid that.
Yeah, it seems like people are getting in trouble now all the time for something for doing something embarrassing in public, whether it be on social media or in the eyes of a camera.
Cameras, hey, folks, are everywhere.
There was quite a... Yeah, tell one English soccer player in the dugout, okay? I don't know if anybody's heard about that story where he got kicked off the club for getting a little bit of funny business with a fan in the dugout and was filmed doing it.
A little funny business.
Okay, yeah. I have to say this, though, about that fan who filmed it, okay? You're the one who's the bad guy here.
Pervert, pretty much. I mean, I guess you could
You're
say
You're filming
that.
Two people doing the nasty.
Consummating, pretty much, right?
Yeah, even though they were doing even though they were doing it in a dugout, you know, I don't know if they didn't really have a reasonable expectation of privacy, but still, you film that?
It happens, man. You'd be surprised what people film, you know, when they're out and about, even in a public game, a game that's out there.
I can understand if you're caught on, like, a security camera or something like that, but somebody was actually pointing his cell phone at the action as it was taking place, and it was like, hey!
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, yeah, what they did was ill-advised, but you know what? Sometimes some people like to take a little bit of a risk to sweeten up the mood, so to speak.
Yeah, I guess you could say that, but...
All right, well, anyway.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can find on...
SFMSports.net, if they don't kick us off after that last little rant that I had.
We've had worse.
Oh, yeah,
we've had
fine.
Worse. We're good, man.
SFMSports.net is where you find us on our main home. We are also on Audio Boom, which is hosted through SFMSports.net.
They may let you go for that one.
They're
there.
Really going to kick me now. Okay, then you got our new friends on Spreaker and on Stitcher as well. Okay, our Facebook page, Josh. What's it called again? It was a little bit of a hot topic this week.
The Baltimore Sports Free for All podcast, where we had our first Orioles tickets giveaway, our free Oriole ticket giveaway of the regular season. It would be weird just to give away tickets just so somebody could pay for them. And you can do that anywhere. Just give away free tickets and people will definitely flock to the site and definitely take interest in the podcast. We've had a great outpouring of support and people just wanting to be fans of our page.
And
so
see, you were thinking that those were hidden intentions. No, Josh has put it right out there for everybody to listen. I did it for the listeners.
I did it for The Rock.
I wanted the ratings.
Nah, but yeah, definitely had some... great support out there on the Facebook page and social media. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at BSportsFree, the number for all.
The number for all?
No, the number for all. The number for all.
Are you from Boston?
No, I'm not from Boston. And my blog, Ray, which is called?
The Sunday Night Sports Delight.
Which you can find on?
Blogger.
Or Google.
Yep. Or any other place.
But you also forgot one thing. What's it featuring for the second week in a row?
The AL East Week in Review.
Yep, so it's not just the Orioles. It's the Yankees. Ugh. The Blue Jays. Ugh. The Red Sox.
Bleh.
The Rays. I'm impartial to the Rays. I have no problem with them.
Yeah, no issues with them since...
I was a Joe Maddon fan while he was a manager.
Their success has been recent. As of 2008, they've been consistently a good team. But before that, yeah, they were pretty bad. Even though they beat up on the Orioles a lot when they were called the Devil Rays.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. I think Greg Vaughn was beating them up while he was in a uniform, which was embarrassing.
Where was Fred McGriff?
Fred McGriff to Wade Boggs.
Wade Boggs was also in the Devil Rays, yes.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of more.
Esteban Yan.
Was Esteban Yan on the Devil Rays?
He was their closing pitcher.
I thought Esteban Yan was on the Orioles. I mean, I know he was, but yeah. He was on the Rays too?
Yeah, he was on the Rays.
Ah, but, okay. I can go with that.
Yep, and as we review the second week of MLB action for the Baltimore Orioles, before we do that, we would like to announce the winner of our first Orioles ticket giveaway for the April 24 Friday night game, which is this week as of this podcast, on Friday night against the Boston Red Sox at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Angel from Dundalk, congratulations on winning our tickets. You definitely had the most fan interaction as far as social media impressions go. You certainly earned it, and we certainly hope you have a great experience this coming Friday night.
Yes, and I remember the one ticket giveaway we did last year where the guys like really enjoyed that. And, you know, the personal experience that they had with going to a home game for free, courtesy of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, yes. Listen to us, love us, be loyal to us. Do not listen to... No, you can listen to our podcast. Okay, we won't kill you.
Listen to our podcast, download our podcast, and you know what? Just trust us. If you listen to us, I'm sure you will grow to love us. You know, kind of like that son-in-law that's dating your daughter. You may not like him now, but maybe down the line, he buys you a lawnmower, and then all of a sudden, he's on your good side there.
Huh. It took a lawnmower to do it?
Sometimes. You'd be surprised what ticks a man's heart there.
I don't know if I want a father-in-law that would warm up to me just because I bought him a lawnmower.
You would be surprised how a father-in-law would warm up to a son-in-law if the son-in-law plays his cards right.
Okay.
But
well,
speaking of playing their cards right, the Baltimore Orioles had a slightly better week than the week before.
I mean, it's becoming to the point where they're staying slightly above 500, and that seems to be the force field that is keeping them from going below 500. There's a line there. Remember, like way back in the day, they could never get over the 500 mark. Well, this season it seems like they can't get under the 500 mark.
No. Well, they were. They were 3-3 after their first two series of the year against the Tampa Bay Rays, which was a road series, and the opening home series against the Blue Jays, which they dropped 2 out of 3 there. So they were 3-3, then lost the opening game to the New York Yankees this past Monday night, which dropped them to a 3-4 record. Ugh, Andrew Miller, why did you have to pitch in a Yankees uniform?
Hey, it's only the beginning of the season, Josh.
I know, but
it's only the beginning of the season.
He's doing good, though. I have to give him credit.
What's he going to do come October, if he's even in October?
Alex Rodriguez, too.
I can't believe I actually have to say this about the New York Yankees, if they could be in October, because that's not a guarantee.
And they may be there because of Alex Rodriguez. He's actually putting up the numbers this year.
As of right now.
As a disgraced MLB player.
Remember, it can go downhill.
He's playing like he has no conscience right now.
I guarantee he's probably on something as we speak right now, just to spite everyone. He's like, you know what? I'm going to pump myself through so much human growth hormone, you ain't going to know what to do with me.
Yeah, and we can say that because he has been on so many PED lists, so it's pretty much out there right now.
He's been on everyone's crap list, too, for like the last couple of years. His reputation's taken a nosedive, so to speak.
Yeah, but after the opening loss to the New York Yankees, they did rebound and win two more games following that series. They won on Tuesday night 4-3. Miguel Gonzalez, who we deemed the hard luck pitcher after one start against the Rays, has rebounded and picked up his first victory of the year, just dealing in that game. I believe he had, 11 strikeouts against the New York Yankees there, if I'm not mistaken, Ray?
Yep, 11 strikeouts, and let's see what else he had here.
Oh, no, 10 strikeouts. 10 strikeouts in 7 innings, 1 earned run. 4 hits allowed, only 1 walk allowed. So, yeah, Miguel Gonzalez, just some dirty dealings against the Yankee sluggers.
Yeah, Miguel Gonzalez, hint, hint, he's pretty awesome, and we're going to be talking about him quite a bit here on this episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Yep, and on the Wednesday game, the Orioles won that series finale there 7-5, which improved their record to 5-4. Brad Brock, who is seeming to be rebounding as the long reliever of the Baltimore Orioles bullpen, picked up the victory, his first of the year. Zach Britton picked up his third save of the year there. And Bud Norris actually pitched a little bit better than he did on opening day on the past Friday at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. 5 innings pitched, 3 earned runs allowed. Did have 7 strikeouts and 2 walks. So even though he did have the earned runs there, Ray, you have to feel pretty encouraged that your boy is up in the strike zone there.
He's not my boy. I keep saying that, I will say this, though. It's progress.
It is progress.
He's making progress. He's getting progress. Better. Baby steps, one game at a time, as much as a cliche as that is. I can't stand when I hear that anymore. Okay, you know what? I'm so sorry I said that.
Manny Machado in that game broke out of his hitting slump during that matchup there, went 1-for-4 and hit his first home run of the season. And pretty much just winning the first. Any time that you win your first series against the Yankees, it's always a great feeling. And it kind of bodes well for you as you go on the road in a 4-game series against a red-hot Boston Red Sox team. And this is where the podcast gets interesting here, because on that Friday game, the opening game where Ubaldo Jimenez started against a nice little twinkle there as we are doing
yes,
the podcast.
Yes, the Ubaldo Jimenez chime continues here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Yeah, Ubaldo Jimenez has been pitching lights out, even though it's been 2 starts. And I guess that's the good news you can take out of his first 2 starts. His second start, though, was pretty short-lived, to say the least. It all started with an earlier play that involved one Red Sox third baseman, Pablo Sandoval, as he slid hard into second baseman Jonathan Schoop trying to break up a play.
Yeah, they're trying to break up a play and trying to injure the guy as well. I mean, did you not hear the news about Jonathan Schoop? We'll get to that in a little bit. Continue on with your story, Josh Hall.
Well, in their defense, Buck Showalter did say, well, you know, we weren't really mad about that because we like to play the game hard just like they do. We encourage plays like that. So Not necessarily the reason why Jonathan Scope suffered certain elements later on in the game, but as we moved forward into the fourth inning of that ball game, Ubaldo Jimenez was dealing. He did give up a couple walks, but he was pitching a no-hitter. And as he got to the fourth inning with two outs remaining and the final batter he was facing was Pablo Sandoval, hits Pablo Sandoval in the upper body, and then all of a sudden, home plate umpire Jordan Baker just eliminated Jimenez right out the gate during a no-hitter, Ray.
During a no-hitter. And they feel like, yeah, I intentionally broke up a no-hitter just to do something to you to spite you. I'm going to hit you. I would think that, okay, maybe he did have a little bit of malice in terms of hitting, but this is Ubaldo Jimenez we're talking about here. The guy's known to have pitches get away from him. I mean, did you not watch this guy all last year? And everything else that was happening with Ubaldo Jimenez, he wasn't even warned. There were no warnings about this. It was just a straight-up ejection.
Usually when you're an umpire, whether you're the home plate umpire, the first base umpire, what have you, the field chief, you pretty much analyze every single facet of the game, whether it's a hard slide like Sandoval did to Scope, whether it's being chippy with a player on the base pass. You analyze every facet of the game and just keep it in the back of your mind and say, okay, I'll remember this if something happens. I'll remember this if somebody gets out of line here. And should Jimenez have been warned? He should have. He should have been warned, but so have the Red Sox and so have the Orioles. So that way you can just have a clean slate from there and say, okay, we're not going to let this affect us. We're not going to let this change the course of the game. And it did change the course of the game there, Ray, because It was the fourth inning, and the Orioles entering the fifth inning, the bottom of the fifth inning, were up 2-0. And by the way, that second run there was a Caleb Joseph inside the park home run. And you figured, okay, Jimenez got tossed, but hey, we're still keeping on the hot streak there. But whew, I tell you what, as much as some of the long relievers have been struggling, Kevin Gausman especially, once Gausman came in relief for Jimenez, it went downhill quickly, and it became a tied ball game going into the ninth inning.
It was not the most enjoyable and pleasant game to watch after Jimenez got ejected, because you were thinking with the way that he was delivering and dealing, it was actually a fast-moving game for a Red Sox game. I mean, we're talking about the Boston Red Sox, who played in a 7-hour ball game earlier in the past couple of weeks. So seeing a fast game with the Boston Red Sox, they no longer have the human rain delay on their roster in Daisuke Matsuzaka.
No.
But it's the Boston Red Sox. The game was moving by and progressing pretty quickly, and then Ubaldo Jimenez goes out, and that game just seemed like it dragged on and dragged on, and it seemed like the pace of play kind of went downhill from then on, and you had Kevin Gausman come in, and just guy was just frustrating to watch.
It's hard to watch him now.
Yeah, you had a decent start in Ubaldo Jimenez, and he gets the shaft from the umpire and says, hey, you're ejected immediately without any type of a warning whatsoever. Buck has got to go to emergency mode and see what he can do to stretch his bullpen out a little bit. And with that, they had to bring in Kevin Gausman, and Gausman just couldn't get the job done against the Boston Red Sox. And lo and behold, the Orioles ended up with in the loss column in that game.
Yep, and as they went into the ninth inning there, or in the later parts of the innings, the eighth and the ninth inning, you had Brian Mattis, who just can't seem to, even though Brian Mattis is sporting a solid ERA for a left-handed specialist, he still is having trouble locating the strike zone in terms of getting that solid out strike three pitch. Brian Mattis in the game had three base on balls, which definitely helped the Red Sox in the case when they faced Tommy Hunter as the final pitcher for that game. Tommy Hunter gives up the game-winning hit. Mattis takes the L, 0-1 on the year, and the Red Sox win that Friday game 3-2. However, Saturday and Sunday for the Baltimore Orioles was a completely different story. As we looked at the Saturday game, Saturday, April 18th game, the Orioles won that game 4-1. Chris Tillman pitching solid in that game as we look at his statistics here. Definitely rebounding from a terrible Sunday start against the Toronto Blue Jays at home. Chris Tillman, speaking of prize prospects, 5 1/3 innings pitched, 6 hits allowed, 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts, 2 base on balls, improved his record to 2-1 on the season. Brad Brock had a solid outing there, 1 2/3 shutout innings with 2 strikeouts. Darren O'Day, Filthy as always, one scoreless inning pitch. Zach Britton got his fourth save of the year. Chris Davis hit his second home run of the year in the eighth inning there, and it's excuse me, yeah, it's, in the ninth inning, in the top of the ninth inning there.
Yeah, Chris Davis is kind of getting a little bit on track here, because I'm looking at the stat sheet for Chris Davis and it's no longer in the 100s. It's actually in the high 200s right now. He's hit .261 in the past
week. Shut the front door.
I know, right? I mean, Chris Davis above .250? What are the odds? This is incredible looking. I mean, if that guy could pick it up, and you see what Adam Jones is doing in the past couple of weeks and how he started his season and everything else that's been going on. I mean, Nelson Cruz who?
Yeah. Well, speaking of Nelson Cruz, he does have 8 home runs as of this podcast. So, I mean, you do have to give him a little love here. We miss you, Cruz.
Nelson Cruz was on this team as it was right now,
they'd be undefeated.
This team would be undefeated.
They would be undefeated.
To start the season, we could actually be saying 162-0. It's not out of the realms of possibility, is it?
Yeah. But, one key note from this game was the call-up of infielder Jimmy Paredes, who was the designated hitter in this game, went 2-for-5 with one run scored, had a double against the Boston Red Sox in the 4-1 Saturday victory. The reason Paredes was called up, though, was an unfortunate set of circumstances involving second baseman and prize prospect Jonathan Scope, who suffered a partial PCL tear.
Yeah, that's really sucks considering the fact that Jonathan Scope was off to a tremendous start.
On pace to hit 30 home runs.
Yeah, seemed like he was going to have a breakout year here for himself, and unfortunately, he's going to be out here for a few weeks, maybe a month or two.
8 weeks at the most.
I would like to see how he rebounds from his injury, because you saw how they brought back Manny Machado a little bit quicker than what they should have, and seeing people come back a little too soon from injury, and how they're just not the same player. I mean, I remember also Brad Bergeson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy was never the same. He got drilled by a baseball on the pitcher's mound. And with that happening, I remember that game, too. That was the game, I believe, that George Sherrill, they announced after it, that George Sherrill was being traded for Steve Johnson and another player. And I remember it was Dave Johnson was on the air for the Orioles.
It was Steve Johnson and Josh Bell they were trading.
And Josh Bell. Yeah. And I remember it was Dave Johnson was on the air for the Orioles radio network, finds out the breaking news while he is on the air and just starts bawling his eyes out. It's like incredible radio. It happened to Brad Bergeson, though. That was the game that he got drilled, and his career was pretty much over at that point, especially after coming back from injuring himself while filming a commercial. Everyone thought they had the next big thing here in Brad Bergeson, and he just fizzled out completely. Hopefully the same thing doesn't happen to Jonathan Scope because of his leg injury. I mean, PCL sprains, they're, it's not the ACL. It's not the dreaded ACL.
The ACL was found clean by the medical staff, which is great news, because once you tear that, you're gone for quite a while.
Yeah, I would definitely seek a second opinion just to take a closer look at the ACL just to make sure it's good. But PCL sprains are also no joke, because they take a little bit of time to recover from. We've got a friend who's very athletic who had a PCL sprain. He still somewhat has problems with it years later.
Well, I guess the good thing about Jonathan Scope is that he is still young. He's very strong for an infielder. And I guess the one thing that will be missed while he's away on the disabled list is his defense, because you can talk about Jonathan Scope's hitting all you want, that he does have some holes in his swing, even though he does have the attributes of being a 30 home run hitter. His defense at second base, bar none, was definitely suitable for that Orioles defense. And considering the Orioles defense is having problems in the outfield right now as far as range are concerned, it definitely will be missed that Jonathan Scope won't be there at second base, and it's just going to be a revolving door with Jimmy Paredes, Ryan Flaherty, Everett Cabrera, you know, just until things get straightened out and we have our key pieces back on defense. But moving forward to more positive vibes as we move to the Sunday game, where the Orioles once again were playing against the Boston Red Sox, Miguel Gonzalez went in and didn't really have a great game. 5 innings pitched, 3 earned runs, but once he gave up a 3-run home run, Miguel Gonzalez was spotless the remainder of the game.
Yeah, I mean, giving up home runs aren't exactly the black mark that it used to be.
They're not backbreakers.
Yeah, if you don't allow it to affect you for the rest of the game, if you just say, I shouldn't have let that pitch go up, and just continue to deal with the way you've been dealing, yeah, home runs could actually be a nice little wake-up call for your performance, and you could just shut everybody down for the remainder of the game. And Miguel Gonzalez seemed to have done that and didn't let that three-run homer affect him, went on to have a very successful outing for the Baltimore Orioles. And Miguel Gonzalez, don't look now, but he's not the hard luck pitcher that we thought he was last week, did we not?
Yeah, last week. Yeah, Miguel Gonzalez picked up his second win of the year, improved his record to 2-1, improved his earned run average at 2.55, and has 15 strikeouts in his last two starts, averaging 7.5 strikeouts and six innings in his last two starts. So solid numbers there for what, your number three starter there on the starting rotation?
Yeah, if you can have your number three starter put up those kinds of numbers, your starting pitching is going to be okay. And but with the starting pitching the way it's been on the rebound since it was last week. The bullpen still needs a little bit of work, especially Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, but before we get to the bullpen, of course, we have to praise the hitting in this game, because once you have 15 hits and eight runs scored, you do have to praise some of the hitters in your lineup.
And hey, you get half off a pizza.
Yeah,
that's always a good day.
Yep, look up your local pizzeria there, folks. Jimmy Paredes having another solid game, 3-for-5 with 3 runs scored. No doubles or anything, just 3 singles, 3 runs scored.
Hey, getting the job done. It doesn't matter about, you know, the extra bases or everything else like that. It's the fact that he got on base and he was able to be sent home.
Adam Jones, 4-for-5, 1 run scored, 5 runs driven in, hit his 5th home run of the season.
Yeah, how about that? The one run that he scored, he drove himself
in. He's not in. And folks, I hate to bite my tongue here, but I'll tell you what, I don't think Adam Jones is hitting golf balls anymore. I think he's finally gotten it. Knock on wood here, knocking on wood on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
This is actually a wooden table that we have here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Our microphones are sitting on a wooden table.
He has the highest average in the American League as of this podcast. I mean, you have to give credit where credit is due. And number 10, your center fielder for the Baltimore Orioles, he's sporting a hot bat right now, and you know how long is he going to continue it? Who knows? Maybe he'll continue it until June, but even when we get into the summertime, Adam Jones is still a solid MLB hitter.
Oh, Adam Jones is your boy. I mean, nobody is my boy.
You have a lot of boys on this team,
yeah,
man.
Nobody is my boy, Josh. It's just the fact that a couple years ago in 2012, everybody wants to talk about Adam Jones always swinging at the low and outside slider in the dirt, and yet he was the best two-strike hitter in baseball in 2012, a couple years ago, and yet in that season was when he really, really people really noticed that he was swinging at the outside pitches and was going crazy with that. But that was the way Adam Jones played, and that's the way Adam Jones hit. He's made a few adjustments for this season, and now it seems like it's working. He's got a serious, serious hot bat right now. He is hitting a beach ball with a tennis racket.
Yep. Three more highlights before we move to the Patriots Day game. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of you love to hear that. Three highlights from the Sunday 8-3 victory. Two scoreless innings from Tommy Hunter. That's good. Two scoreless innings from Kevin Gausman. That's really good.
That's really good.
But here's the great part. David Ortiz gets ejected in the game by getting chippy with home plate umpire Paul Emmel.
Getting very chippy. You could maybe see.
He was throwing a shoulder into the guy, man.
You can kind of see that the umpire crew was trying to make up for that
debacle on Friday
by ejecting Ubaldo Jimenez in the middle of a no-hitter with no warning. And then, so they decide, okay, Ortiz, you've been jawing at umpires pretty much all throughout your career. We've had enough, so we're going to – and it's like he's trying to drive his shoulder into him. Like, boy, you are on national TV. You tower over me in size. You're bigger than me and everything like that.
Lost your mind.
But what are you going to do to me on national TV? Go ahead and make a fool of yourself right on national TV and see what people think about you.
All right, so I guess we have to do it. Let's review the Monday game that happened this past week, or just to close out the series there.
If you were at work, you didn't miss anything.
You didn't miss anything. We'll put it to you this way. The game ended in the 7th inning. Rain delay. Thank God. 7-1.
You could say it was the slaughter rule, though, because they do have that in some sports.
7-1 victory for the hosting Boston Red Sox. Wei-Yan Chen takes the L, 0-1 on the year. But here's the kicker. 4 1/3 innings pitched, 3 hits, 5 runs, 5 walks, 3 strikeouts, no earned runs. So the good news is Chen lowered his ERA. The bad news is the Orioles' fielding percentage took a dip as they had 3 errors in the game. And when you look at the errors and the guys who made them, LeVarnway made an error. Of course, you don't expect him to be Caleb Joseph or Matt Wieters. Chen made an error there. Manny Machado, shocker, made an error. So
I mean, he is human, Josh.
He is human.
Brooks Robinson had errors.
Yeah, he had errors, yeah.
Mike Bordick, though, went a whole, pretty much a whole season without an error.
You know who was
and did not win a gold glove, which was a travesty.
You know who was the most productive hitter for the Orioles in the 7-1 loss? Ryan Flaherty, 2-for-3 with an RBI.
He can do that.
Oh, my goodness.
He does show power from time to time. He's a poor man's Melvin Mora.
Okay, so let's review the week here. Who is your awesome Oriole of the week?
Got to give it to the man again, Adam Jones. He's continuing to impress at the plate and continuing to say, hey, maybe we don't really need Nelson Cruz after all. Would be nice. It would be very nice to have Nelson Cruz with his 8 home runs right now, but at the same time, you got to make do with what you got, and Adam Jones is doing that. He could just sit there and mope and say, ah, we didn't do anything in the offseason to improve our club and make ourselves better. No, he just said, you know what? I'm going to go out there and make myself better, and you know what? Nelson Cruz who, I say? Tippy Dink who?
Miguel Gonzalez, 2 starts, 2 victories, 12 innings pitch, 15 strikeouts. That's your awesome player of the week. If we have to give it to a pitcher, I have to give it to Miguel Gonzalez. I know Adam Jones has been hot. I know Caleb Joseph has been hot, which is a shocker because last week we thought Joseph wasn't going to hit a barn door, and now the guy's lighting it up offensively.
That's the beautiful thing about Major League Baseball is that it's a game of ups and downs, and you're going to see somebody who started out the season pretty bad. They get their average over 300, and eventually everything is hunky-dory.
Who was the bad Oriole of the week?
Gausman. Yeah, that's
that breaks my heart saying that too.
That's pretty much a no-brainer at this point. Is Kevin Gausman? He's your he's your not so good player of the week because of the fact that the guy just seemed to couldn't get out of his own way on Friday night, and he literally changed that game. Not just the call of Jimenez getting him out of there. He changed the game with the pace. The game just slowed down when he was on the mound. It just was a complete bore fest on Friday night with the way that he was pitching. And get it together. I mean, you're a sucky player of the week this week, but you could very well be the awesome player of the week next week if you rebound.
Yep, so the Orioles end the week 4-3, which is good. You take 2 out of 3 at home against the Yankees, and anytime you take 2 out of 4 at Fenway, it's a win-win. I mean, you would like to take 3 out of 4, but it's always nice. The Orioles this coming week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they travel to Ontario, Canada to take on the Toronto Blue Jays in a 3-game series. Then they return to Oriole Park at Camden Yards on Friday night. So, Angel from Dundalk, we hope you enjoy that game on Friday as they host a 3-game series against the Boston Red Sox. Stay tuned for next week as we will be reviewing Week 3 of Baltimore Orioles baseball.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Hello, listeners. Ray Atkinson here for the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Every month of the 2015 regular season, we'll be giving away a set of tickets to Baltimore Orioles home games. How do you win these tickets? It's simple. First, be a fan of our podcast. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at BSportsFree, the number 4-all. Recruit your friends to be fans of our social media pages. At the announcement of each giveaway, the most fan interaction on Facebook and Twitter will win the tickets. So be a fan and win the hottest ticket in town.
The 2015 NFL Draft will be taking place Thursday, April 30th through Saturday, May 2nd. So we're going to have a lot of fun talking about the NFL Draft prospects over in the next 2 episodes, including this one. But for this week's edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, we are pretty much going to be doing a rough draft. And by rough, I mean not any names whatsoever, just positions.
No name dropping on this episode. Pay no attention to the men behind the curtain because, hey, right now in terms of mock drafts, everybody's got one. It's kind of like
and they all stink.
Yeah. What is the popular saying there, Josh? Opinions and mock drafts, they're like they're like rear ends. Everyone's got one.
No, I was going to say they go together like lamb and tuna fish.
I don't know about lamb and tuna fish. Lamb and tuna fish?
You ever seen Big Daddy with Adam Sandler?
I mean, I have. It's just maybe spaghetti and meatball.
Yeah, considering we live in America. Yeah, but as we are talking about our rough drafts here, we are pretty much just going to be going by each round. The Ravens have 10 overall picks in the 2015 NFL draft. Maybe they'll sacrifice a few picks to move up in this year's draft. Maybe they'll trade the 2016 draft picks to move up, maybe get an additional pick.
Possibly trade a player?
Maybe. Maybe we've seen it before. Who knows? But in the meantime, we have 10 overall picks for the Baltimore Ravens. They have their first, second, third, three fourth rounds, three fifth rounds, and a sixth round pick. So that sixth round pick for the Baltimore Ravens is going to be their Mr. Irrelevant unless they decide to trade down and get another seventh rounder. But
come on, punter.
Yeah, I know. Ray definitely is going to have a quite the list here of positions. So, okay, let's start with the first round here. In my first round, I believe the Ravens have some glaring holes in the secondary and in the wide receiving core, especially after the departure of Torrey Smith and especially after the injuries that involved Ladarius Webb and Jimmy Smith, and not to mention the poor play of the safeties.
Yeah, so you had all of that going for you in last season, yet somehow the Ravens were able to squeak out a successful season nonetheless.
Yep. So with the 26th pick in the NFL draft, the Baltimore Ravens will be selecting, in my opinion, a wide receiver, right?
Now, I'm going to differ on that opinion because as much as wide receiver is a glaring need for the Baltimore Ravens, they've had success without a big-time wide receiver. They've lost a deep threat in Torrey Smith, but they still have, well, Steve Smith, but it all depends on how much time does this guy have
left. Just going to get another year older.
Yes, he is, so... Unfortunately, though, I'm going in the first round cornerback because I think that's a more glaring need because they lost games last year because of their secondary. So you've got to be able to find a way to fill holes in the secondary. Now, granted, Ozzie Newsome doesn't pick based off of need. He picks based off of best player available. But I think that a lot of the better receivers could go in the first round or maybe wait until the second round. So I'm thinking cornerback in the first round just because of that aspect.
Your two starting cornerbacks for the Baltimore Ravens, according to the recent depth charts here, Ladarius Webb, your left corner, your right corner, Jimmy Smith, who's coming off the injury, and looking at other reserves like Asa Jackson and Rashawn Melvin.
So yeah, you got to go corner.
You definitely will have to
go corner because Ladarius Webb is a big question mark at this point.
Even though Steve Smith is your number one, your number two on the depth chart here is Marlon Brown. Nothing against Marlon Brown, but you sort of want to upgrade over Torrey Smith in the meantime. But let's move on to the second round where the Ravens will have the 58th overall selection here. And, of course, you figure, well, let's not be boring. Let's not get offensive guard or offensive tackle because pretty much the Ravens have one of the more solid offensive lines in their division, possibly the AFC. But with the 58th overall pick, Ray, you know, I think I'm going to make the controversial pick and go tight end, second round. What do you think?
So no cornerbacks in the first or the second round for you?
Considering that Dennis Pitta is recovering from an injury and considering that Crockett Gilmore and Philip Supernaw are sort of unproven commodities at the tight end position.
I want Supernaw to be successful. I want to be able to say the name Philip Supernaw on a regular basis. Let it happen here, Baltimore. You can do it. I believe in you.
I believe the Ravens need playmakers on offense immediately, and I think a tight end definitely will help their cause there. Who's your 58th pick?
I believe that the 58th pick is going to be traded to Philadelphia for Tim Tebow.
Oh, stop.
Yes.
It's not going to happen.
Oh, it will happen.
Matt Schaub is on the team.
I got that. Okay, yeah. So the 58th pick is going to go wide receiver. I'm going to like flip-flop it around and say that cornerback goes in the first round, wide receiver goes in the second round, and that will allow you to address the needs that you have on your defense and your offense. But I think that the more glaring need at this point is in the secondary because, I mean, yeah, it's a passing league, Josh. Everybody says it, but defense still very much matters.
Yep, and defense will be the theme for my 90th pick for the Baltimore Ravens, which will be taking place in the third round. I have them going cornerback. And the reason I have them drafting a cornerback in the third round, not necessarily to start right away, but as insurance, you know, not to start over Ladarius Webb or Jimmy Smith, but to start just to make sure guys like Asa Jackson and Rashawn Melvin don't start in place of them in case another injury happens. Because let's be honest, when Ladarius Webb and Jimmy Smith are both healthy, they are quite the cornerback duo. They aren't a great cornerback duo, but they are solid enough to maintain your defense and maintain its stealth. But I do have them picking a cornerback with the 90th pick. Who do you have in the third round?
In the 90th pick, I'm going to go tight end just because Dennis Pitta, to me, that hip injury, it's the second hip injury of his career. Don't know if this guy's going to effectively bounce back and become the same Dennis Pitta of old if he even decides he wants to play next season. So with that, I got to go. The Ravens have to pick a tight end in the third round because, yeah, Crockett Gilmore, very unproven, and the same thing with Philip Supernal.
He did have a touchdown in the playoffs.
Supernal did have a touchdown last year, so there, he's got that going for him.
Well, Gilmore had the playoff touchdown.
Yeah, but I'm saying Supernal did have a touchdown himself last year during the regular season.
But as we move from the third to the fourth round, this is where we get a little interesting with position players on offense. With the 122nd pick, I had the Baltimore Ravens selecting a running back. Their running back depth chart, according to a recent site, Justin Forsett is, of course, your starter, just signed a three-year deal. Still a healthy and somewhat young 30-year-old running back.
Young 30-year-old running back. He's like a Kurt Warner.
Still has tread on the tires there. Lorenzo Taliaferro is still going to be your second running back. It's not Bernard Pierce anymore since he went to the Jaguars. And Fitzgerald Toussaint is your third running back. So you're drafting a fourth rounder thinking maybe he'll move up, maybe he'll go over Taliaferro, and maybe he'll be the successor of Forsett. But who do you have with the 122nd pick?
With the 122nd pick in the 2015 NFL draft, the Baltimore Ravens select another cornerback.
So you're definitely shoring up the secondary there with the corners.
Yes, I believe the secondary is your number one priority going into this offseason. Is you got to be able to get something, some type of depth at corner, because as valuable as wide receivers are in the passing league, corners that know how to stop the deep game and corners that know how to defend a wide receiver, those are your more valuable commodities in today's NFL.
All right, we move on to the 125th pick, where I will be going defense here. I have the Ravens selecting a defensive tackle / defensive end and shoring up a defensive line that needs to make up for the hole or the spot that Haloti Ngata left there.
Yeah, it's a pretty big hole there at the defensive tackle and defensive end, because Haloti Ngata, towards the end of his tenure here, was playing defensive end. But with my 125th pick, I'm going running back, Josh, and yeah, I got to believe that Justin Forsett is going to be the guy going into this season. He stepped up tremendously well for Ray Rice during all that saga that everybody knows about ad nauseum. But Justin Forsett, I think it's going to be another great year for him. But you'd like to have one other running back besides Lorenzo Taliaferro, because Bernard Pierce, as you said, is gone. And you never know what kind of health Justin Forsett is going to be in, because all it takes is that one bad hit and you lose your running back there for a few games or even possibly the season. You got to be able to find some way to shore that up and make up for it. Running backs aren't as valuable as they used to be in the NFL, but they still make a little bit of a difference, especially if you can have one that can be involved in your passing game.
Before we get to pick 136 here, getting back to the defensive tackle side real quick, your starting nose tackle on the current Ravens depth chart is Brandon Williams, 335-pound Missouri Southern State.
That's a big boy.
Yeah. And also you have Timmy Jernigan, Florida State standout, on the defensive tackle side. So even if you do draft a DT, you still have some solid defensive linemen, some solid young defensive linemen there. But moving on to the 136th pick, I'm drafting another wide receiver, Ray. I'm drafting another wideout, seeing if one of them pans out. Who do you have with pick 136?
Now, you see, we got a little bit of contrast here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, because you're shoring up wide receivers in the receiving game. I'm shoring up the secondary game.
Yeah, I picked up one corner.
Yeah, my 136th pick is going to be safety, because, yeah, the safeties played pretty bad last year for the Ravens. One of the other reasons why they lost the games that they did last year. And moving on to that, you just got to be able to shore up the secondary, because when you lose, when the cornerback gets beat deep, it's up to your safety to save the cornerback, so to speak. That's why they're called safeties. So I want to see the Ravens get safety here in the fourth round, only because of the fact that it really cost them last year, and that's your big, big need going into the draft.
So not necessarily taking over the free safety role that Kendrick Lewis is currently holding right now, or the strong safety starting role that Will Hill's holding, but maybe a pending former first-round pick, Matt Elam, possibly, in the rankings there?
Quite possibly, yeah. I want to see if he can turn it around just a little bit, because
I give him one more year. If he doesn't improve, he's gone.
Yeah, it's like the
it's that window, that three-year window.
It's like the Michael Orr effect. I mean, the guy had a lot of hype coming out of college, especially the movie didn't really help his matters much, but with that and everything else that was happening, the guy was a false start machine, kept holding everybody. And I remember in the first year they were saying, oh, Michael Orr's got to go. He's got to go. I'm like, this Michael Orr, what are you talking about? And then a couple years later, he's like, yeah, I agree with you. He should go.
All right, we're down to our last four picks here. Pick 158, which is in the fifth round. I have the Ravens shoring up their offensive tackle position and have them drafting a, hopefully, a taller offensive tackle, preferably right tackle, where Ricky Wagner is currently starting there right now. Who do you have, Ray, with pick 158?
With pick 158, I have them picking a tackle.
Really?
Defensive.
High five, we picked the same position.
No,
all right.
No. Defensive tackle.
Got me all excited there.
Sorry. Yeah, but can't agree with you on that because of the fact that I still am putting emphasis on defense because defense wins you championships. That in the early 2000s, that was 100% the case and still is the case today. And with defensive tackles, you need to be able to stop a run game. And that was one of the Ravens' glaring weaknesses last year is that when Nata went down because of his suspension, the running game, the run stop, really suffered for the Baltimore Ravens. So you got to have some form of way to stop the running game. That cost them a few games too, and you needed to be able to just be able to shore up your defensive line. And losing Nata, that's a big loss. So hopefully they can make it up somehow.
Yeah, left tackle Eugene Monroe is pretty much your starter. James Hurst is backing him up, but as far as right tackle goes, yeah, Ricky Wagner is your starter. And you'd hope to have a solid backup behind him in case something were to happen to Ricky Wagner, who had a solid year in 2014.
Wait, are you talking about offensive line?
I'm talking about offensive line, but we're moving on to...
Because I was talking about the Ravens' run defense, not the run offense.
But I was talking about my pick there, right? Not everything's
okay,
about
you. Okay, so you're just completely ignoring my pick then?
Not everything's about you, bud.
It was my time to shine. You said, okay, what's your pick, Ray?
All right.
I gave my pick.
Well,
I
we're
said,
hoping we can get on the same page with pick
I
one.
I said the reason why I gave the pick, and you're supposed to agree with me or rebuttal me.
I agree with you, Ray.
Instead you just went back, oh yeah, I think the offensive line's like, oh.
I agree. Either a defensive tackle or offensive tackle will be pick 158. You happy?
That was a clown move. That was a clown move, bro.
Okay. Pick 171 in the fifth round. I had the Ravens shoring up the receiving core once again and drafting a wideout.
Hey, for once we agree at 171.
All right, so it's a wide receiver.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. So
no jokes, no gimmicks, no whatsoever. It is a wide receiver at pick 171. It is the second wide receiver I have in my mock draft, so that will... we finally agree on something.
Okay, we're down to our final two picks here. Pick 175 in the fifth round. I have the Ravens drafting an offensive guard. Not to start or anything, but to just get Ja Reed out of town.
Where?
Please.
We want to get Ja out of there because the guys...
Not James Earshall, not Marshall Yanda, not Kelechi Osemele, but Ja Reed.
Yeah, Ja Reed is kind of like... if there was... if the Baltimore Ravens have
he's like a thumbtack on the floor and you step on it.
If the Baltimore Ravens do have a cancer on their team, it is Ja Reed. So, to me... I mean, they've gotten rid of Terrence Cody, and they've gotten rid of a bunch of other troublemakers that they had on this team, but Ja Reed is one that has stuck around for the longest time for we have no reasons whatsoever why he's been on there for oh so long. But, yeah, hopefully you get an offensive tackle to supplement Ja Reed and get him out of town. So, okay. Final pick,
sixth
yes.
round, 203. Mystery relevant for the Baltimore Ravens. I have them going inside linebacker. I don't see this pick necessarily making a team, considering that you have C.J. Mosley and Daryl Smith as your starting inside linebackers, along with Terrell Suggs on the outside and Elvis Dumervil on the right side. So, yeah, I have them drafting an interior linebacker and possibly shoring up the depth chart there. Who do you have with the 203rd pick?
Come on, punter.
So you're challenging Sam Cook's position with the final pick.
No, I just wanted to do that just to spite. Nah, to tell you the truth, I would love to see a punter get drafted in the NFL draft because I would go nuts. I'd say, hey, drink up to that. Let's get it going in your draft party or whatever you have because now the draft occurs during the week and not actually on a weekend. You can't have the draft parties like you used to on a Saturday or a Sunday. So, okay, with my 203rd pick, I'm saying they're going to get somebody in the return game, a return specialist. So that's
to replace Jacoby Jones.
Yeah, that's going to be the position that I pick in the sixth round is somebody that is just got good elusive speed and is able to be a factor in the return game without actually being a consistent everyday starter. He can just simply focus on making returns.
By the way, your current kick returner and punt returner is both Michael Campanaro and Michael Campanaro. So you just want somebody to...
You don't want to clone Michael Campanaro so he can be your second kickoff return specialist.
Yeah, you don't want that. Okay, so on the next episode of the Free For All, we are going to be name dropping, right?
We're going to be having actual names here on the Baltimore Sports Free For All. You don't want to miss it.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free For All.
It's late April. You know what that means?
2 minute rants?
Look, the rants are coming. They're on their way. But no, it's not the 2 minute rants. We're going to be talking about NHL and NBA playoffs here for a little bit.
Quick predictions, right?
Yeah, a little bit of quick predictions going forward. Maybe some surprises here and there. Maybe something that you never knew what would happen here on the Baltimore Sports Free For All and what we're going to pick in terms of the fact that. Have we talked about the NBA and NHL season at all?
Time to time. I mean, we were talking about it earlier on this podcast. I mean, we brought up Kwame Brown and the Wizards.
Yeah,
and,
but that was because we were teasing the fact that we were talking about the NHL and NBA playoffs later on in the show. I'm talking about have we actually made NBA and NHL a topic on this show that we talk about throughout the 2014-2015 regular season?
Not since the finals. And it just always seems to be that way in sports where people just want to wait for the postseason to start talking about it.
Yeah, but that's the thing with hockey and basketball that they share in general is the fact that nobody really cares about the regular season except for wanting to go to a game just to experience the game live as like an event or something like that. But a lot of people will go to a game not knowing what the standings are for the regular season for the NBA or the NHL. They just go there to have a good time. They see what happens, win or lose. You just want to be able to have a good time. And that's what the regular season is pretty much to me about the NHL and NBA. It's just a little bit of a sideshow.
Right.
The NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs where it really starts because they just go on forever. I mean, it's April. It's mid-April right now. This is going to go all the way to June. And it's still going to be June, and we'll be talking about the NBA Finals and the NHL Finals here. Maybe we'll see the Spurs do it again in the NBA?
Maybe we will. But let's start off on the ice here with the Stanley Cup playoffs.
We're still talking about ice and snow and winter.
Just this once, maybe in the next couple of weeks. Who knows?
That's all right. It's indoor hockey, so you have to actually artificially create that ice now. That's a good thing.
Let's go to the local side of things in the Eastern Conference as the second-seeded Washington Capitals take on the third-seeded New York Islanders, who currently lead the series 2-1. By the way, Islanders playing their final season at Nassau Coliseum. Then guess where they go? They go to Brooklyn.
They go to Brooklyn where everybody else is going.
Yeah, but you're the New York Islanders. You specifically play in Long Island. It doesn't make sense.
The Brooklyn Islanders?
Yeah, that wouldn't make sense at all.
Maybe they should change their name and make it a hockey thing. The Brooklyn Brawlers.
Okay, so the Islanders-Caps series. Who do you have winning this series? I have the Caps winning it. I don't know how they're going to win it 2-1 because they've looked flat with Holpe at goalie. I'm hoping Ovechkin turns it up in the next couple of games, but I'm guessing the Islanders want it more than the Caps do at this point. They want to continue their series at Nassau.
It seems like since 2007, the Capitals have somehow fallen behind in the first round to only come back and make a series out of it. I think they're going to make a decent series out of this first round, but I see the Islanders taking it just because of the fact that they're up 2-1. Series will be coming back to Washington, but at the same time, it just seems like the home crowd is not feeling it as much as they used to. It's like they've seen this before. They know what's coming. They say, okay, why get hyped up for the playoffs for, what is this, since 2007? It's been about 8 years. They missed the playoffs for once in that eight-year stretch.
Yep.
But overall, they've just made it to the playoffs and became some of the high-scoring, top-scoring team in the league, only to fall flat when it comes to the playoffs. And it seems like this year it's going to be no exception to that.
All right, so you have the Caps advancing to the Eastern Conference.
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
I said I have the Islanders. Oh. I said I don't. I just see that the Capitals are going to make a series out of it. I don't think it's going to be that big of a wash, but at the same time, I think the Islanders are going to get there. And you got the other side, the Rangers and the Penguins, and the Penguins are playing some horrible hockey in this playoff round. They seem to rebound it a little bit, but at the same time,
against the Rangers,
yeah, you're gonna have a Rangers.
Rangers have been red hot all season.
Rangers Islanders quarterfinal.
Even Sidney Crosby, who could be lights out, red hot for the Penguins, just will not seem to regain that Penguins magic there. for Pittsburgh. So I have the New York Rangers winning this series. We'll say 4-2, possibly. All right, and moving on, Tampa Bay Lightning takes on the Detroit Red Wings. I have the Lightning winning.
How can they take 4-2, though?
4-2? Well, it's simple. You go 2-2, then you win the third one and fourth one. Boom, 4-2. It's a seven-game series.
Seven-game series, yeah. So they would win 4-3.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, really? So you say 4-3?
Okay, never mind. Okay, never mind.
Now you got it.
I'm confusing myself here. Okay, now I know. Okay. It's a late day. I've had a long day. I couldn't really think about how they – okay, so yeah, they're going to win it in six. Okay, fine. That's what it is. Okay, that was a dumb Freudian slip on my part.
All right, so I have the Tampa Bay Lightning going over to the Detroit Red Wings, but usually hockey traditionalists will always pick the Red Wings to go far in the playoffs. But the Lightning have been surprising all year. They even give the Capitals a run for their money in several games this season. So it's going to be quite the experience there as we go into the Eastern Conference.
That's the series to watch in the Eastern Conference, yeah. Is Lightning and Red Wings. And you got the other side, the Habs and the Senators. Yeah, I can't see how the Habs are not going to sweep that series.
So you have the Canadiens over the Senators there? Yep. Nice old Canadian series there.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt.
No, nice Canadian series, eh? Yeah, definitely going to be interesting in the Eastern Conference. But now let's go to semifinals here. You have the Canadiens, or you said you had the Senators. You said the Canadiens, right?
Yeah, I said the Canadiens.
Canadiens
and
the Lightning. All right, so let's say the Canadiens and the Lightning. Who do you have in that game?
I'm going to go Canadiens again.
I got Tampa Bay Lightning.
All right.
Let's go with your opinion on this. So you say Canadiens?
I'm going to go with Canadiens.
Canadiens going to the Eastern Conference Finals, according to Ray Atkinson. Okay, so now we go New York Rangers and New York Islanders, a good old New York State classic there. Do the Islanders continue their battles at Nassau Coliseum, or is this just the Rangers' year?
I'm going to go possibly a little bit of upset here, and John Tavares and the Islanders upsetting the New York Rangers. Why not? So, I mean, you can't have an all one versus one. Yeah, you can't have a one-versus-one conference finals there. It just sounds depressing.
All right,
the final four are all number ones.
So we're going to have a boring Eastern Conference Finals with the Canadiens and the New York Islanders. Who do you have winning the Eastern?
No. I'm saying if it was the Rangers, it would be boring because the Rangers are one, and so are the Canadiens. So
who do you have the winning Canadiens and Islanders?
I'm going to go Islanders.
Go Islanders?
Yeah.
Okay.
Make the surprise, the underdog, the upset there with the New York Islanders. Hey, if the Capitals lose to the Islanders and the Islanders go on to win the Stanley Cup, I guess there's no shame in that, right?
All right, well, as the Islanders wait in the Stanley Cup, we still have a Western Conference to go over. The Anaheim Ducks host the Winnipeg Jets. I want to see the Jets beat the Ducks, but the Ducks are up 2-0 right now, and it's pretty much dead in the water, right?
I wouldn't say that just yet. I mean, you can come back from a 2-0 hole.
But still, the Ducks are a more superior team on the ice.
Yeah, 1-4 seed. You got to go with the Ducks in that round. Then you got the Calgary Flames. And the
another
Vancouver
Canadian
Ducks.
Battle.
And that one's another good series to watch.
I'm going
to
take Vancouver.
I'm going to take the Flames.
You're going to take the Flames, so the Calgary Flames. All right, so we got Calgary meeting. We're going to have Calgary meeting Anaheim there shortly. The St. Louis Blues versus the Minnesota Wild. I'm going to take the Blues in this one.
Yeah, Blues.
Blues. All right. And Chicago Blackhawks going up against the Nashville Predators. Who do you have winning that
Blackhawks.
Game? Blackhawks. Okay, so Blackhawks facing the Blues. Blackhawks?
Blackhawks.
Blackhawks, okay. And the Flames facing the Ducks. I'm going to go Emilio Estevez and say the Ducks.
You want the Ducks.
You want the Ducks? Do you want the Ducks?
How about the Ducks?
Okay. Ducks versus Blackhawks.
Ducks. Quack.
Ducks and Islanders in the final, in the Stanley Cup Finals. Who's winning that?
Islanders.
Come on.
I got to go with that. That was my upset.
Fine, we'll go with the New York Islanders there. All right, so that's your Stanley Cup picks, according to me and Ray. Of course, as the weeks go on, we will most likely be wrong, but it's entertaining nonetheless. Moving on to the NBA brackets here. The NBA playoffs. Let's start with the Western Conference, the more interesting conference. The Golden State Warriors go up against the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, thanks
Come
for playing.
Come on, Pelicans.
Thanks for playing.
Yeah, Golden State, Steve Kerr, Stephon Curry, possibly the best shooting team in all the NBA right there. Yeah, they're beating New Orleans. I mean, they're already up 1-0 against them.
Thanks for playing, Pelicans. I mean, you got a really cool team name.
Yep. Portland Trail Blazers, the 4th seed Trail Blazers, hosting the Memphis Grizzlies. Grizzlies are up 1-0, have the next game on Wednesday. Do you have the Grizzlies appending the Trail Blazers, or do you think Trail Blazers make a nice comeback?
I'm going to say the Grizzlies win that game, win that series.
James Harden and the Houston Rockets up 1-0 against a more playoff-experienced Dallas Mavericks team. I'll tell you what, I've liked what I've seen out of Houston this year. I think they'll go a little bit far with that team.
Okay, I'm going to say Dallas still has some fight left in them and go with Dallas.
All right, so Dallas and Los Angeles Clippers face the playoff-hardened San Antonio Spurs. Do the show-offs in the Clippers append the old men in the Spurs, or do the old men have one more last go in them?
I think you got to go with the old men just because it's the San Antonio Spurs have been the most non-talked-about successful team of the 21st century. I'm still going to be giving some love to the Spurs. The Clippers, they don't have that distraction hanging over their shoulders anymore in Donald Sterling that they had last year. But now they have that behind them, they're looking a little more a little more impressive, but I got to give it to the San Antonio Spurs.
Okay, so moving on to the semifinals, you have the Spurs, the Mavericks. Who'd you have? You had Memphis against the Trailblazers, correct?
Memphis and the Trailblazers. Yeah, I had Memphis. Yeah. I had Memphis upending the Trailblazers.
And then Golden State. Okay, Golden State and Memphis.
Golden State.
You have Golden State. Okay, Golden State moves on to the Western Conference Finals. And Dallas versus San Antonio, a classic Western Conference playoff match. Who do you have winning that? Spurs? Old men?
That one, I'm going with Dallas.
No country for old men with Ray Atkinson here.
Well, they had their country, but now their country is moving on.
So a 7th-seeded Dallas Mavericks team is going to the Western Conference Finals to take on the Golden State Warriors.
And thanks for playing.
Just like that.
Yep.
So Stephen Curry and Steve Kerr, you guys are going to the NBA Finals, according to Ray Atkinson. Moving on to the East, going on to the local side of things, the Washington Wizards, the 5th-seeded Washington Wizards, taking on the Toronto Raptors, up 1-0. I like the Wizards in this matchup.
You gotta believe
Paul Pierce, John Wall, I like that team.
Considering that the way they played down the stretch and fizzled out, that they were talking about firing the coach and they've miraculously made the playoffs.
They still might.
Only in the NBA does that happen because of the disparity in talent. The disparity in talent in the NBA, I have to flip a coin on that series and say, okay, I'll go Wizards.
All right.
Just because Paul Pierce has that playoff experience.
All right, so now we move on to the next bracket up there where the number one seed Atlanta Hawks, have a 1-0 lead over the Brooklyn Nets, which shocked me that they make the playoffs because I didn't even notice how good they played this year. You still have a solid player in Al Holford, who is questionable for the next couple of games with an injury, but when he's on the field, when he's on the court, I should say, we're used to saying on the field here at the Baltimore Sports Free For All. Horford is still a solid contributor to the Hawks. I had the Hawks beaten the Nets senselessly.
Oh yeah, definitely, no doubt about that.
All right, so the Hawks will meet the Wizards in the semifinals there in the Eastern Conference. The LeBron James led Cleveland Cavaliers, the 2nd seed, host a 7th seed shocking Boston Celtics, led by former Butler head coach, what was his name? Went to a couple national championships. Oh, my goodness.
But you're blanking on his name now, aren't
you? I am blanking.
It was the same year that Shaka Smart had his come-out party for the VCU, and he eventually...
Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens.
You finally got it.
Yeah, Brad Stevens. 36-year-old Brad Stevens.
I was going to get you to say Rick Moranis.
With that team should be coach of the year, considering who they lost over the years. But I don't think that's going to help them. Cavaliers are up 1-0 against them. I think LeBron, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, I think they're ready to turn it on.
Yep, and they'll live up to the hype of their team, and LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers move on to face the Chicago Bulls, the Milwaukee Bucks.
All right, I have the Bulls winning. I think with a healthy Derrick Rose, knock on wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think with a healthy Derrick Rose and a solid head coach in Tom Thibodeau, I think the Bulls are going to make a run for the Eastern Conference Finals, where in the semifinals, they will meet up with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Does Derrick Rose finally get over that career hump and find himself in a finals, or is LeBron James just set on taking his hometown to the NBA Finals?
I will say this, though, that the winner of that series is going to go on to win the finals.
Well, let's not say that just yet because Golden State is still on the other side.
That they are.
All right,
but
so who do you have?
I'm picking another team from the Eastern Conference to win.
So who do you have, Cleveland or Chicago?
Cleveland.
Okay, so Cleveland moves on to the Eastern Conference Finals. The Wizards play the Atlanta Hawks.
Hawks.
Really?
Thanks for playing, Wizards.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so Hawks versus Cavs. You have the Cavs winning.
Yep.
So LeBron James plays in his, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth straight NBA Finals, first with the Cleveland Cavaliers, playing against a shooter-friendly Golden State Warriors team led by Stephon Curry and coached by Steve Kerr. You do not see Steph Curry holding up the finals trophy?
Maybe not this year.
So it's going to be a storybook ending. Well, not a storybook ending. He's still relatively young.
He's still very young.
LeBron James is going to be hoisting the trophy in Cleveland.
I would say so.
All right, so there you have it. The New York Islanders are your Stanley Cup champions, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are your NBA champions, according to us at the Baltimore Sports Free for All.
According to us? What about you?
I'm going to go with you this time.
Okay. Time for two-minute rants. Josh, you went last week, so guess what? You're first this week.
I will definitely oblige there, sir. And as I start off my rant for this week on the Baltimore Sports Free for All, I want every aspiring young sports reporter out there, whether it's in your head you want to be a sports reporter one day, or maybe if you're taking a communications class in college, that someday you make it in the field of sports journalism.
Pick another career.
Well, come on now. That's some encouraging words there from my co-host right there. But I digress. Britt McHenry, ESPN sideline reporter, 28-year-old ESPN sideline reporter, was caught on video this past week berating a tow truck driving company employee. Pretty much just downplaying her, pretty much just berating her, telling her how ugly and fat she is, telling her how she just couldn't find a good career and how Britt McHenry was so blessed that she has a brain and a degree and everything else. Well, once ESPN caught word of this video, once they caught sight of this video, they gave Britt McHenry a one-week suspension from her job. And of course, Britt McHenry, like everybody else that gets caught, immediately apologized on Twitter, saying how wrong she was and how it was an oversight of her personality. Now, I watched the video over and over again, and to me, this isn't just some bad day. To me, this is somebody who has major personality flaws, who, in my opinion, if I had to remind anyone of who she reminded me of, possibly Patrick Bateman from American Psycho, played by Christian Bale. And that's not a compliment. That's some narcissistic behavior there from somebody who does national sports reporting for a living. So, Britt McHenry, you need to realize how easily replaceable you are in this industry because you're easily replaceable.
Yeah, and people freaking out of tow truck drivers or anything like that. The tow truck drivers are trying to feed their families, okay? And they can actually make some decent money to what they do. It's not that bad of a career. It's like trash men. They actually make pretty much bank. All right,
and just because you have a degree doesn't mean you have a brain.
Yeah, exactly. My two-minute rant, too many people have degrees. My two-minute rant is not really going to be negative this week because over the past week, my social life has suffered quite a bit because of the reason being Mortal Kombat X. I gotta admit that I've been playing that quite extensively.
Nerd!
Hey, what? Can you blame me, though, for wanting to play Mortal Kombat X because that series has kind of rebounded over the last couple of years? The Baltimore Sports Free For All is not endorsed by Mortal Kombat X. It's just a game that I've been playing in the past week and have been thoroughly enjoying, especially with Takahashi Takeda. That guy is pretty nasty in his own right. Kids, if you're listening to this podcast, though, that game is not for you, okay? Wait a couple of years or play it under your parents' supervision because, oh my goodness, it is uberly violent and it is a game that you want to not play in front of your mother because it's got a few things up its sleeve that would make Joe Lieberman freak out to this day. We are talking about the series that caused video games to have a rating system in the first place. It was Mortal Kombat that caused the Entertainment Software Ratings Board to be formed. And just playing the game and seeing people, there are a couple people that are downing the game because The game allows you to pay for easy access to the fatality, so to speak, and easy access to skip fights. You pay money for that to also to unlock everything in the game. Yeah, you're paying for cheat codes, so to speak. Okay, it doesn't affect my ability to play this game because I know the fatalities. Part of the fun of the game is learning how to do the fatalities. And also the fun in the game is unlocking all the stuff. There's actually a decent unlocking system in the game to where you can go around into a crypt and find hidden stuff that otherwise wouldn't be initially available to you. Or you can cheat yourself by buying the stuff and unlocking it from day one. You can do that, or you can just play the game normally and get your money's worth out of it. I'd rather get my money's worth out of it.
Sleepy Bear Canoe Gaming.
Just Sleepy Bear Gaming.
Just Sleepy Bear Gaming now? That's what it's called?
Yeah, we dropped the canoe. We just call it Sleepy Bear Gaming
now. But the canoe makes it more fun. It makes it seem like you're on a fun camping trip.
We're gonna still incorporate a canoe somewhat into it, but every time we were just like talking about it, we were just saying, oh, it's Sleepy Bear Gaming. That's what it is.
All right, so what do we have on the docket next week? Obviously, week three review of the Orioles baseball games against Toronto and Boston. Hopefully, win both of those series. Oh, final draft, Ravens draft. So, name dropping, right?
Yeah, we're going to be name dropping. I might even say that Kevin Gausman could be our awesome Oriole of the week.
Maybe we'll see how bad we did in our NHL NBA predictions.
Yeah, our brackets are going to be busted like from day one.
Oh, my goodness. It'll be fun, though. And you'll have fun listening to us. Make sure you download us, Facebook, Twitter, sfmsports.net, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Spreaker.
So many things to manage.
I know. And the Sunday Night Sports Delight with the AL East Week in Review on Blogger and Google. You can't miss it.
This has been another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
I'm Josh Hall.
And we will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.